I mean, I think one, I mean, in the past I pointed out that interesting things you can consider are things like, if you go to say, well, let's say this program here, PowerPoint. PowerPoint has some built-in drawing capabilities, but we have this lousy JPEG image here for the whole PowerPoint foil. So in principle, we could have these images in things like PowerPoint and Persuasion to be not specified as actually as an image, but specified as a VRML set of commands, because what PowerPoint and Persuasion allow you to do is to join draw lines and circles and stuff like that. And so those are all the two-dimensional equivalents of what VRML specifies in three dimensions. So VRML linked with Java has some pretty interesting capabilities for very novel presentations where the VRML diagram replaces some pictures you might otherwise draw. Alright, so this also points out that there is a browser, the Dimension X's Liquid Reality browser, which is written entirely in Java, and also the Live Connect architecture in Netscape allows you to link Java with the VRML world directly. So there are various richer ways of yet linking via Java and VRML, as well as these scripting nodes. So this file here links some of the browsers which support Java. Presumably they'll all eventually support Java because I think it's effectively the language standard. So I don't think a browser, a VRML2 browser without Java 6 months from now would be considered acceptable, because by that time it should be quite clear that everybody should support that. So I believe the top three are the ones we have the most experience. Sorry? Oh, I see. So Sony, I gather, doesn't support JavaScript. So the Cosmo player will then soon be an attractive one if it supports Java and JavaScript. So I think it's fair to say that whereas it's obvious that Java is bound to stay as a scripting language, presumably JavaScript status is a little less clear. We'll have to see. Depends on the fight between Microsoft and Netscape. So I already mentioned there's a VRML package which has a script class in it, and you need to define for your script node something that extends the script class, and it has, well, certainly an initialize method which you call at the beginning, and a process event method which actually processes events. Probably a shutdown method is optional. I don't think you have to have a shutdown method unless you need to do something when the script node is deleted. All right, so now we come to an example, which is a very simple example, which has the feature that the color of a sphere changes when you click on it. This could probably be done with conventional keyframe animations, but this is an example to show how you can do it in Java. Right. So there are two foils here, which I believe give the Java, of which this is the first one. So we have a transform as the overall container, and then we have a very simple scene, which is basically a sphere. There's a touch sensor attached to the sphere. Here we have a sphere, and we have a shape which has a geometry of a sphere. It has an appearance which includes the material node, we're going to call that sphere color, which is initialized to a diffuse color, which is red, RGB of 100. So effectively this is a red sphere, which however has a touch sensor attached to it. Then, alright, so here's the key rest of this. There is a change necessary in this file. It should say, if any of you have your file, your handout, it should say field SF color. New color. Probably 100. This must define. The mistake is you have to define everything you want to do, have in this script, and it doesn't do that. So, with that proviso, let's go through this example, which is reasonably illustrative. So for the script node, we have a script node which is called ColorScript, and we basically give you the address of the Java, which is called changeColor.class, the bytecode associated with this, that's the URL. We're going to have attached to this, let's say, one event, which is the event in, which is going to be called clicked, and we're going to have two fields, one called on, which is either going to be true or false, which actually is just a toggle which will go back and forth between true and false. And we have another field which is a color, which is going to be called new color, which I say was mistakenly left out of this file. So now let's look at this this routing commands, because they show you how you do routing with scripts as opposed to with animations, which we did up to now. Currently we showed how animators are routed together. Here we show how we do a routing with scripts. So it is reasonably straightforward. TS, capital TS, if you go back to the previous foil, is the touch sensor. So that says we route the event out, TS dot is active, which is true when your mouse lives on top of the sphere. So when that happens, we send it off to colorscript.click. So we now see what this is. So here's an event in defined called clicked. So this thing called clicked will be true if and only if there's a mouse on top of our sphere. So this is we're routing the action where the touch sensor sees your mouse to a field in this particular script node. So here you see, which is this event in, which is the one that's going to trigger this URL. So when this event in is set, by definition that URL is invoked. So this is like, sort of systems programming point of view, this is an interrupt handler. And the interrupt is this event here. The next routing command is this missing definition of the new color is routed, which value we'll see is set in the Java. So we're going to route the output thing, which is the color script on new color. Notice the same, the usual notation, node name dotted into field. We're going to route that output value to the sphere color node, and we're going to route it to the diffuse color, and the way we do that by definition is you put set underbar in front of the field names. So what this says is, so if you look at what's happening, our Java class is just accessing information in the script node. We're using the route to relate things in the script node to the other nodes in the scene, which are the color of the sphere and the output of the touch sensor. So this illustrates rather nicely how root commands are used to sort of build complex capabilities. Alright, so then we roar over to our dot class, well, our dot java file, which will be compiled to the dot class file. So it does what you'd expect. We define a class called changeColor, which extends the script class, which is the one defined in the VRML package. The most important thing we define is a thing called a new color, which is we'll see what that's going to be in the next few lines here. So the initialize method is the thing that's called when this VRML world is loaded. And so what does it do? So all this particular initialize method does a bit of housekeeping. It establishes a connection between the Java world and the VRML world. So what it does is it takes the it uses a built-in method in the VRML package called getEventOut, and the built-in method called getEventOut has a string associated with it. So what this says is, go to the VRML script node that you just came from, which invoked this, look for an event out called newColor, and then define an object in Java which corresponds to that event out. So this is effectively the technology that allows us to glue Java to VRML. With things like, there's a getEventOut, and there are a set of methods here: getField, getEventOut, and getEventIn, and they're solely designed to allow you to define Java objects that correspond to VRML events or VRML fields. We'll have associated with the new color object in Java, we'll see a whole bunch of methods that allow us to read or set the properties of this field. But all the initialize method has to do is to establish a Java object which corresponds to the VRML field. And so this whole package has essentially a set of methods and classes which allow effectively a one-to-one mapping between Java and VRML2. So you can grab anything from a VRML2 file and then have methods to access or change values. All right, so here we have essentially the interrupt handler. Remember, we were ordered to supply a method called process event. And so here's the process event for this particular case here. And the essential, so here we see actually the thing called getValue. GetValue does what you expect. It takes a Java object which represents a VRML field or event, and then it gets the value of that object, which is what you'd expect. And I say, as well as get value, there's a host of other ones which you'll find in this appendix D. There's get size, set value, add value, insert value, and then there's a corresponding thing for, and those are defined for both scalars and also arrays. So there's a whole set of methods that allow you to get and set values. Alright. Okay, so when the So the critical thing here is, so we, here we have on, so this gets the value of the what is on? Steering me. Yeah, so here we have this field called on, which is actually just this toggle, which is going to be true or false, which will allow us to tell whether we want to be red or blue. So if the value of on is true, then we call the set value method on the Java object called newColor, and we set it to be red. If on is false, then we use the set value to be blue. And then we change the value of on to be the opposite of what it was now, because we set it equal to the not of itself. So all this logic here is it takes the two Java objects on and newColor, corresponding to the VRML fields on and newColor, and it basically has a simple logic to look at the value of the on field and set the value of the newColor corresponding to be red or blue to whether on is true or false, and then it changes on from true to false and vice versa. So that's that example there. And so if you go to this wonderful example here, whose URL is given here, you will find that when you start off with this red thing, it becomes blue when you click it, and vice versa. And unfortunately, as I mentioned, if we have a look at this, we will roar off to this server, which is which was working earlier today. And as I told you, VRML allows, being a very compact representation, allows a very fast display of images. We won't bother to do that, will we? Oh, Christ. What? Which one do I want? Oh, that was pretty good. You have things in reserve here, is that right? Alright. So my guess is that for some reason you're not set up to receive, we're not going to look at any more of those demos. The funny thing is, it didn't crash my system, and I carefully tried it. So we shall have to see what. Here we are. So anyway, we know what we'll now back. And so the next set of examples here show how you can do yet other amusing things. And so there are a set of more complicated examples. The first one allows dynamic generation of nodes. The second shows you how to dynamically generate routes. And then there's yet more complicated models of honeybees and stuff like that. So we're not going to go through all those examples. Maybe we'll just go quickly through this next example, which shows. So this is another more. This shows a capability I don't think you can do with the animation. Because it actually, when you click on a sphere, you have and you generate a whole new sphere. So this actually creates a whole node. So let's look at. I'm not going to resize this, should I? That would be risky, isn't that right? What? You want to risk resizing it? I'm not going to be responsible. All right. So here we have our transform node, we have our touch sensor, and we have a sphere, and then we have a script which is called dynamGen.class. We have an event in which is called touched, and an event out which is going to be called addSphere, because it's going to add a sphere. So here we have a touch sensor, which is called, we call gen underbar touch. We remember a touch sensor actually can output a time, and so that time, so when that touch time generates an event, it happens also to associate a value with it, which is called the time. That is linked to this touch field in the script. So that will be that's the input event. So the touch sensor is going to therefore trigger this script. So this is a simple triggering of a script by a touching. And then we can see what we're going to do here. There's an add children capability attached to a VRML2 node. And we're going to route the output of this script, the event out, which was going to be called addSphere, is going to be generated by the Java. We're going to route it to the add children it's field. Is add children an event? What was add children called? Let me check. Add children is an event in. Yes. So this this has to be an event in, because this is an event out. It's going to be routed to an event in. So this is a defaulted event in, which is present in this. If you just read the definition of transform, there is an add children attached to that transform, and so this is how you add a child node by routing the thing that generates the child node to this default child node event in, which is present in every transform node. So if you just read this definition of transform in VRML2, first event in is called add children, the second event in is called remove children. This is how you add a node or delete a node from a transform. So if we look here, what we're doing is very similar in general structure to before. This initialize method is defining the Java object addSphere to be corresponds to the VRML2 event out called addSphere. So this is get event out, remember we had before. It's the one that maps. We actually had, I think, get value. We had get value, but no, we had get. We didn't have it for events. The one we used before was get field, I think. Anyway, so this is the one that you use for event out. This just maps Java to VRML. So the VRML node defined by this string is going to correspond to this Java class. Sorry, Java object. So this is rather ugly, this stuff here. But so what's happening here? So we have a long thing occupying two or three files, which is the process event method. And what it actually does here, you can see what it's generating here. It's generating the VRML string, which is the definition of the new sphere. So this is just VRML. And we're just defining, for no particular reason, we could use, I think we could do this with a single string, but we're defining four strings, which are just the four lines which define a VRML sphere. So here we have VRML. Then we get some colors, which are actually going to be random components of red, green, and blue, so this sphere is going to be a random colored sphere. Here we have a nifty method in the VRML class, which is going to be used to get overall properties from the browser. The base node is going to be the place where we stick this new VRML node. So that's again base node is again defined in as a class in the VRML package. So you just have to look all this up in the definition. And then finally, we set the first base nodes of 0, the first entry in base nodes. And we do that by going to the browser object, which we just defined. And then we'll find a browser object that has a whole bunch of useful things, including something called create VRML from string. That does what you'd expect. It creates a VRML object defined by a bunch of ASCII strings. And then finally, having created this VRML, then we do add sphere, which is the VRML node which is going to hold the new thing we created, set value, which is the value of this new VRML node, and we're going to set it equal to what we got here. So this is a rather clumsy technology, maybe, which effectively takes some VRML ASCII and sticks it into the VRML file by effectively linking the output of this Java program through that root command to the add children event in of a transform node. Okay. And then if you diligently work through the next one, you will find that you can create a root as well as a node. So a root is so you can make two activities linked to each other. So that's a similar type of example there. And now, given there's not too much time left, we do want to cover JavaScript, which starts on file 42 here. All right. So there are a few different ways of using JavaScript. There are two simple ways. Ignore the first bullet. I don't understand the first bullet. The second bullet we will illustrate, and the third bullet. So the second bullet we'll do last. The third bullet essentially says, although it's not very clear, that you can use JavaScript in essentially the same way you use Java. So let's just do a, if we don't do it, use the next few files, we can show that. And there's a couple, there's two examples of that. And it just has an animation which is essentially like an interpolation done with JavaScript, not Java. And it doesn't give the full details here. So we have some grouping node, like a transform or a group node. And then we have some children with various capabilities. And then we have an animation sensor, which is one of the sensors. And then the thing that's most interesting is we have a script, which is going to be called mover. It has .js is JavaScript. You can either you can actually have a file containing JavaScript, or you can write JavaScript colon followed by the JavaScript. So JavaScript is a true scripting language. It can be included directly in the VRML as long as you start the effectively you give a URL which is JavaScript colon followed by any amount of JavaScript. So here we have the event images that come from the which we are going to set from the clock. So this is our standard animation strategy. We're going to have an output which is a 3-vector, and the output is going to be forwarded to a translation vector of a thing called ball transform. So this is a classic animation where we have a clock driving it, and then we're going to produce a 3-vector, which we could do with these interpolators like we illustrated already. And all I want to do here is to show you this thing. And so this shows you that JavaScript allows you both functions and values which have names, which are essentially the same names as the VRML. So we have a very simple mapping here between JavaScript and VRML, where there's essentially a one-to-one mapping between the names in VRML and the names in JavaScript. So here's the event handler. So this is the thing that's in this move1.js file. It has just this JavaScript. And so it is effectively doing an x-direction position interpolation because it feeds in. This is the thing that's invoked automatically by that event in, this JavaScript function called set underbar fraction. It sets value underbar change of 0, 1, 2. These are the x, y, and z. And those automatically get fed in to the this value. You see here we have set underbar fraction. That's the name of the JavaScript function. And value underbar change, those are the things we're calculating. So you can see that there's a slightly neater interface between JavaScript and VRML in the sense of the one-to-one mapping between the names. Whereas in Java, we had a much more formal way of taking the names as an ASCII string and sending it to a method which then did this mapping of Java objects into VRML objects, essentially. So this is typical of an interpreter. An interpreter like JavaScript can have a much more flexible naming scheme where the names of this JavaScript interpreter are the same as the names of the VRML, whereas Java, being a compiled language, can't have this flexible naming capability. All right, so that's method one of using JavaScript. Identical to Java, you have the pluses and minuses. It's somewhat more elegant, easier to understand and less clumsy in linkage, but you only have what JavaScript offers. And then the final thing I wanted to show you, and hopefully this won't crash the machine, is what Hassan did. I don't know what this, what VRML browser is this running? This is still Cosmoplayer? What? Alright, so we can't use this. Alright, so I recommend that you go, unfortunately we've disabled our VRML browser now. If you go to this 4057, remember these things called add-ons, you click on the add-on and you have your thing set up properly, you will invoke a nice VRML browser, and you will generate this page here, which is shown in rather, well, I mean it's hardly readable and after being JPEG or GIFed. And so what is this doing? So this is a very nice page which is effectively doing, using JavaScript in a way we're very familiar, in that if you look at the JavaScript that's here, that JavaScript is effectively writing a .wr file, .wrl file. So it's a two frames, a frame here which you specify values. This frame here, which is a form specifying values, defines JavaScript variables, the values of JavaScript variables, like the radius of the cylinder and the height, and whether it has tops and bottoms. Based on those values, Hassan has then written out the VRML too that corresponds to those values, just in terms of, I guess, a document.write syntax. And then it's, of course, sent to this other frame, so we know how to do that, to write to a different frame in JavaScript. So here we're using JavaScript. So the previous way, we had JavaScript as the code associated with the VRML2 node. This is an example where JavaScript is dynamically writing a VRML2 file. So these are two different ways of using Java. At least I would view these as distinct ways of using JavaScript. And I would recommend you looking at that in a less challenged browser than we have here. All right. So that's, I guess, the end of the course. And you should now all qualify for your $200,000 a year job with your favorite commercial company. And just send 10% back to Impact. Not quite as lucrative as playing basketball, but almost as lucrative.